Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
President Biden has received a standing ovation during his emotional speech at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. He said the party was in a battle for the very soul of America ahead of the contest between his vice president, Kamala Harris, and Donald Trump.
Now it's summer. The winter has passed. And with a grateful heart, I stand before you now on this August night to report that democracy has prevailed, and now democracy must be preserved.
In other news this morning, Italian emergency services are back out searching for four Britons, two Americans missing after a luxury yacht sank in bad weather off the coast of Sicily yesterday. Those unaccounted for include the tech tycoon Mike Lynch and his 18-year-old daughter Hannah. And swarms of robot aircraft are being developed by the UK to tackle wildfires by spotting flames and working together to put them out. Final testing's taking place on the self-flying drones at an airfield in Cornwall. That's the latest from Radio News Hub. I'm Stephen Davis.
When you need a number fast, the only number you need is 118212.
Miss Maureen, the telephone detective, at your service.
Maureen! 118212.
Calls cost £2.50 per call plus 75p a minute with a minimum 1 minute charge plus your phone company's access charge.
Coming up, Africa in Focus.
1 minute you've got the gymnastics on. Off she goes, into flippy one, another flippy, followed by a flippy twisty, and the next, flip flip hooray, you're a millionaire. Lotto, will you be next? Play on app, the National Lottery. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Africa in Focus.
Colorful.
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 Genius.
Colorful Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, or even good evening, depending on your time zone, where you are listening to us from. Welcome to Africa in Focus, and I'm your host, Julius Baluto. We are coming to you from wherever you are, all the way from the heart of London, and this is on Colorful Radio. Keep it colorful. Join us, Africa in Focus, your show for this week. I'm joined by a great man. He's doing quite a lot of work. He really has a lot of energy, and his name is Beck Wagoro. He's a writer, music artist, and technologist based in London. Beck, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Julius, and thank you for having me on your program. It's a very it's an honor to be here.
It's our pleasure, and definitely yes. Introduce yourself better than I've done it.
Okay, so I am a writer originally. I started writing. In fact, before I was a writer, I was an actor, and I got into writing, and I have sort of navigated my way through many creative mediums as an artist, as an actor, and then as a writer, and now as a musician. And I feel like now I'm bringing together all my kind of creative outputs into this kind of music making sort of thing that I do now. So I'm a musician. I'm, as you've said, a writer and a technologist. And the technologist part kind of comes from my PhD, which I'm currently studying at the Bartlett School of Architecture at UCL, University College London. It's a degree in architectural space and computation. So I'm kind of, again, channeling my another aspect of my creativity through that. And I'm kind of looking at spatial productions, so immersive productions, things like that, sort of drawing from my background in writing and narrative creation, and seeing how, as we're beginning to see with technology evolving, how technology is changing narrative production in the context of performative space, theater and film being combined in a kind of immersive environment. So that's kind of what I'm looking at as well, in addition to my work as a musician and as a writer.
Well, that's amazing. Yeah, let's maybe talk about your acting, if you may.
Okay, so I started acting maybe sort of professionally when I was about 16. I joined the National Youth Theatre, which is a very well-respected institution in the UK for young actors, young people that want to get into theatre. So I sort of started at the National Youth Theatre, and it's interesting actually that you asked me this question, because it's kind of connected to the work that I'm doing now with Brixton House, with this concert that's coming up on the 31st of August. The first production I did at the National Youth Theatre was with a director called Bolano Beeseson. And he had written, I think, one of his first pieces that he was directing with the National Youth Theatre. And he actually cast me in his production. And I say this is interesting because I've had a relationship with Bolano over the years. And he was the former CEO and creative director of Brixton House Theatre, which is where I'm now an associate artist. And it's kind of there that I've discovered this new kind of way to express myself through music over the time that I've been there. And so my journey has kind of, it's interesting that my journey has kind of come full circle, where I started at the National Youth Theatre doing a production with Bolan, and then have ended up as an associate artist at Brixton House, all those years later, doing this concert now. It's been quite a journey. That's kind of the story there.
Yeah, definitely. No, it sounds great. Sounds great. Beck, look, when we have something in common, when I used to act, of course, it's not long ago, and it's not like I gave up on it. It's still a passion that I have. I used to find acting very useful. For example, if I feel a bit stressed, I'll travel through my imagination and I'll visualize and enjoy sunshine in Barbados and have a drink, coconut drink on the beach. And at that realm of things, right, I never required any visa. Just my imagination. How useful have you found acting in life?
It's Joe, it's very interesting that you talk about this, because I think acting for me was kind of a very cathartic experience, embodying other human beings, becoming someone else. I think humans have this tendency towards escapism. And I think it's not because they want to escape their life. I think it's because actually, if you think about it, you are yourself. You don't get a break from being yourself. You are yourself your whole life, from the day you're born until the day you pass away. So I think this idea of escapism escapism can take many different forms. But I think this idea of escapism and just taking a break from yourself, it's a way to understand yourself, and it's a way to understand yourself from a kind of external perspective. So I always found acting a very cathartic experience, because it took me away from myself. It kind of took me, as you say, to another place. I was very, very passionate about acting, and it was something that I sort of fully absorbed myself in, fully immersed myself in. And it was very interesting as well, because the roles you play oftentimes are the words written by an author. They come out of someone else's imagination, and how you interpret that, what you bring to that role, is always a fascinating thing. And it's always interesting how you can kind of surprise yourself with the kind of things that you conjure up, just completely organically. It's always been a very kind of, as I said, cathartic sort of experience for me doing performing and acting.
Indeed, and it really enriches your life, because I found out that the more different characters that you play, they kind of inform you more about lifestyles that aren't yours.
Yes.
You could be just act as a robber. In real life, you're not. But because you have to research to fit and match the character, you realize, wow, it's a different experience, but you had a moment and a chance to learn more about other people's lifestyles. So I found out also through a funny experience whereby when you are acting, you are innocently playing a character, but the receivers on the other end of your acting, some of them don't know where acting begins and real life ends. And I share this through an experience I had. I had a colleague of mine who were acting on a detective series that was back in Kenya. And he was playing the role of a killer. And one time we went in a marketplace to just buy meat. And there are two ladies there. One, they both had watched his acting the previous night. Now in real life, they were extremely scared. One of them was telling the other, because I could understand their language, like, hang on to the phone, you have to call the police. I saw this guy last night. He killed. I promise you, he's so dangerous.
Good grief. Oh, gosh.
And I couldn't help but freak out. I'm like, what could happen next? Because they could scream, you know? And mob come, and they're like, who attacked you? Before you know it, you're in trouble, you know? So I found out that it's not everyone, it's not every society that understands, like, you're just an actor. Yeah. No matter the character you play, it's just acting. That's not real life. In real life, you are different from your acting. Have you ever been caught up in such a dilemma?
I think it's an interesting question, because I think as actors, you kind of sometimes you can't help but bring yourself to the role in a way. Even if you're playing another character, it is you playing that character. It's not you, but it is you, if you know what I mean. So I think sometimes when you play maybe a particular type of character like the one you've mentioned, or a problematic character, I think external viewers, people watching, can sometimes correlate that with you as a person, even though it's words written on a page by a writer. They can correlate the actions and things of the character that you're portraying as being traits that are inherent within you as a human being. And it's almost like, have you ever had a friend or someone sort of tell you, I had a nightmare and you were in my nightmare and you were doing horrible things. And they have a feeling towards you, even though it's something that they've conjured in their mind. It's not you. It's a dream. It's a faculty of their own mind that has kind of conjured up this. But the emotions you feel are very real. You know, they're very raw. They're very tangible. That's certainly something that I've experienced. And I played a role. Which I feel kind of links to this. I played Henry, King Henry in Pirandello's Henry IV. When I was at university, I was at UCL doing my undergraduate degree, and I was part of the Drama Society. And I played this character, this character written by Pirandello, King Henry IV, who was who you couldn't distinguish. It was difficult to determine whether he was suffering from mental illness or whether he was playing the role of someone who was suffering from mental illness. So it was kind of in the context of this conversation, it was kind of meta in the sense that, the character was playing a role, or was the character playing a role? And I feel like, you know, sometimes when you perform, people can, as you say, you know, people can really, really feel those, feel the story, feel the narrative. And I feel like in playing that role, I definitely experienced some of that. I definitely experienced, you know, people coming up to me and saying, where are you in that? Is that you, or is that something else? So I've definitely experienced that.
Colorful radio.
Colorful radio.
Indeed. And of course, on the acting, we'll come to other things as we get along. But of course, you are westernized. You're in the Western world. And I brought up that deliberately because I'm sure you came across all these narratives that when it comes to these big time movies, the Hollywood and all that, many times black people were given roles of bad characters. There'll be the criminals running from justice, and the police will keep on singing, you know, bad boy, where will you go? They come for you, that kind of stuff. And again, to illustrate the same point, the fact that also when you talk about these big hitters like James Bond, the narrative also that we never in our lifetime see a black James Bond. So when you talk about inclusivity, and of course it matters what character you play, and I'm using that to illustrate the same. Do you think where we are right now, grappling with issues on diversity, racism, pretty much alive, do you think the narrative will change and there will be more inclusion to see, in the mainstream, for example, that it matters which character you play, then begin to see, right, why can't James Bond then be a black James Bond?
I think things are changing, actually, because it's not necessarily fully come from the top, where producers are making decisions. It's actually come from consumers, and I think platforms like Netflix, streaming platforms in general, have kind of changed the way things are done. And I'll give an example of this. You had, if you have demand, it's kind of a business thing. So if you have demand for a certain type of thing and you're a business, then it doesn't matter really what that thing is. You want to cater to that audience because it will be more profitable for your for you as a business. So I kind of feel that streaming platforms have opened a bit more this question of representation in kind of film and television. And I think we're starting to see greater appetite for these types of productions, which are more inclusive. But I will say that films like Wakanda, for instance, which was a big Disney production, and it was kind of maybe the first really big kind of blockbuster film, I think, certainly in my lifetime, that I've experienced, the first kind of major blockbuster movie that featured a predominantly black cast. And it's a very interesting film because I think it marked a turning point in kind of the approach to representation on the big screen. I think it marked a major turning point. But that being said, I feel like that film it's an interesting film, but I think there are many things that maybe people might grapple, find challenging. But then it is fiction, and you know, there's many things that you can kind of look into in that context. But I would say that I think things are beginning to change, and although that change may not be as immediate as we would like it to be, I think things, because of streaming, things are sort of starting to happen.
It kind of gives optimism, because you're right in a way, the more platforms we have, the better. And you've seen probably the role of people like Tyra Perry, and probably then through that experience of people like Tyra Perry, you know, spending billions to build a studio that was in straight away competition with Hollywood. I mean, do you think that's a way to go, and that people shouldn't just be crying babies, but get their hands dirty, trying to get the change they want to see?
I kind of do. I understand what you're saying, and I kind of do believe that. I was an actor, and I felt like I was getting good roles, but they oftentimes weren't. You know, I felt like they weren't kind of. You know, at first it was interesting to play, you know, gangsters and things like that, because that was so different from how I was raised, from my kind of cultural background. And then I sort of realized that actually, you know, you can add fuel to the fire by doing that, and by playing those kind of roles that contextually might be deemed stereotypical of I don't know, you know, playing into a stereotype. And so I feel, well, what I did was I decided to write, because I wanted to kind of create roles that would be interesting for me to play, that were not the standard kind of idea of what you know, what a black male would be doing, but like were authentic to actually my experience as a black male and my experience growing up and the world that I saw and the way that I interacted with people and the things that I did. So I kind of feel like, yeah, this sort of thing around storytelling can really be driven by, you know, people who want to enact that change. If you want to see stories with black actors, black characters, or whatever ethnic background, you know, I feel like if you feel compelled enough to make that change, then you should absolutely do it and enact that change yourself. I think it can be helpful to highlight an issue, but at the same time, if you're not doing something about an issue that bothers you, then I think, you know, that can be kind of counterproductive in a way. So I think it's really important to enact the change that you want to see. I think that's really important.
I quite agree. Lastly, on the acting, what's your opinion on Nollywood? And of course, Nollywood, it's a big heater in terms of movie industry in Africa. So perhaps we equate that with the Bollywood in India. But it's interesting, and I throw that to you, perhaps because you're in the industry. And if I look back a couple of years back, we have UNESCO. UNESCO is the arts body within the United Nations that's supposed to facilitate cultural exchange globally. Yes. And we found that in the early days of the formation of UNESCO, countries like US wanted not to be a member because they only wanted narratives. And when it came to entertainment, when it came to movies, to be from north to south, but not from south to north. And by that, I mean people like Africa or other countries consume Hollywood products, but they weren't willing to see an Hollywood movie in the US. That's why they had to withdraw from UNESCO. So where we are right now is maybe just your opinion on the impact of Nollywood so far, and just the way you know it.
I think when it comes to stories and narratives from Africa, there is such a wealth of history, and there is such a richness in the stories that the potential stories that could be told. I think it's one of the most interesting places, in fact, one of the most, in a sense, in terms of in sort of internationally, I feel it's like an untapped well of these incredible stories that have happened over time, or even just been imagined. And I kind of feel like maybe it's time for someone who has money, or someone who can really do something on a grand scale to build the African version of Netflix, or build the African version of Amazon Prime, or whatever it is, because I think the richness of the stories that are there to be told in from Africa is incredible. So when I think about Nollywood, and I don't know an awful lot about Nollywood, but when I think about Nollywood and just how it's catering to how it's telling stories in a very fresh way, I feel like there's definitely a market for that globally, and I've always dreamed genuinely that. That we could kind of create a platform for these African stories to be told in a way that that is global, and that can really draw people in, because there have been some beautiful films that have come out of Africa, beautiful stories that have been told, and I feel like it's just the tip of the iceberg, and it would be nice to see the revenue generated from that being reinvested and growing those industries, growing those economies. I think that would be that's a dream of mine, and it's something that I would like to be a part of, but I have not seen an opportunity to sort of do something on the scale that I think needs to be done or could be done.
This is Colorful Radio. Colorful Radio.
You know what? I agree with you, because ownership of platforms remains very key. Because it is through platforms, these platforms, that narrative is controlled. And having worked with global media, from BBC, and I'll really see in real life what it means. Because if you're going to give 30 minutes program by BBC to cover 54 countries in Africa, you'd be so shocked how limited that could be. Because one country, for example, like Tanzania or Kenya, can supply stories for 24 hours channel each day.
Yes.
Because
yes,
everything that's happening within the country is very important, and it's also very big in scale. But if you come and you say, we are CNN, we're going to give you two hour time, you know, slot within maybe a week, and that's how we cover Africa, you'd be so shocked to find out it's only the big and negative hitters of stories that may end up being, you know, all the time disseminated through these kind of platforms like CNN. So ownership of platforms remains key. And I think you're right. If we have in Africa on the ground, we had the equivalent of Netflix. Yeah, now we are talking, because immediately you have control over your narrative. You can tell your stories from your point of view.
Yes.
So I quite agree. And yes, that vision is great, but do you think perhaps maybe then we need also to, it's a tall order thinking about government's role in it, but also the fact that, as you put it rightly, there's a wealth of untapped wealth. Because yes. Africa, 2,000 languages spoken. Each language constitutes a different culture.
Exactly.
And how enriching that could be if we were to pick up all these stories, narratives, begin to educate the world about Africa, because the world doesn't know much about Africa. They pretend they know. They don't.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting point, because I think, but I'll say this, because I think if you look at music, if you look at what's happening in the music industry, you have a lot of African sounding music coming out now that is popular music. You have real African artists like Tyler, who are becoming global pop stars. And I find this a very interesting thing. I think we're at the cusp of something that is very interesting that's starting to happen, because I think the sounds we're hearing, the I think, you know, musically we go in cycles. I know that in my lifetime there was a period where rocky sound was kind of the more prominent thing, and then it sort of shifted to hip hop, and then it's shifted to R&B, and it kind of, you know, it goes in these cycles. And I feel like now we're moving more towards this kind of African Afrobeats kind of pop sound. And so if you look to this industry and what's starting to happen, you know, you've got producers turning to Africa and trying to draw talent and put them on a global platform. And I think when that starts happening, it will start entering other fields, because people are beginning to recognize, it's taken some time, but people are beginning to recognize the unbelievable, and I'll say it again, the unbelievable richness of culture and sort of the wealth of history that is in Africa. And I just hope that can be exploited by Africans primarily, and as you say rightly, to tell their story, to really bring those narratives to the world from the perspective of African people, whether you're from Kenya, whether you're from Tanzania, whether you're from South Africa, Nigeria, wherever. You know, whatever your perspective is, if you can bring that, I think that's the untapped sort of thing, because I think people are beginning to be drawn to this sort of stuff. So I think, yeah, we're seeing it happen, starting to happen in the music industry. I think maybe it'll take a little bit of time. I don't like when things take time, but I think it'll take a little bit of time. And then, you know, it only takes one domino to fall for the rest to fall, you know. So I think once people's attentions are turned to what's happening in Africa culturally, sort of on a global level, I think it will become a far bigger thing than even I can imagine, or, you know, or even we can imagine. And I think it's starting to happen. And I just hope, as I say, that it's African platforms that are showcasing the work of African creatives to the world.
Now then, in terms of your writing, it's just maybe to clarify, writers are for books, novels, but also it could be creatives, as in terms of production, film, whatever, theatre. So could you just quickly talk us through your writing, and just to clarify to listeners?
Yeah, sure. So my background is as a playwright originally. So I used to write plays and things, and I had a few productions put on. And then I got very interested in film, and I wanted to learn the form of screenwriting. So I did a bachelor's in film and television at University of the Arts London, and specialised in screenwriting. So the type of writing I do is kind of performative writing, narrative writing, that kind of thing.
Okay, thank you. Then we just need to back on music. You see, when I think about music, it's just amazing because music tends to be more spiritual than your understanding of even what's been talked about. I'll give you an example. A couple of years back, we had a big rock star, you know, in from Jamaica. His name was Yellowman, and he came up with this song, Zung Zung Zeng Zeng, and that song became a hit. It was performing in different countries in Africa, but one curious journalist once stopped him and said, right, what does zung zung zeng zeng mean? What does zung zung zeng zeng mean? And Yellowman said, I don't even know. They're just sounds I make. And I'm like, you've been dancing yourself silly. This song with lots of passion. And so therefore, that's why I argue like music is spiritual more than even your understanding. I love music. And there are songs I can sing different language. I'll never know the meaning. But yes. I can sing the words fluently that you cannot know. You think, okay, this guy understands the song. But you stop me and you're like, what does the song mean? I'm like, I don't know. I just love it. We connect.
Yes. Yeah.
So what's your experience on this amazing trend?
I feel like what I love so much about music is, unlike writing, when you're writing a film or when you're writing a play, when you write a film or a play, you write the script. And then there's another step where it has to be produced. And then there's another step where you have to bring actors on board. And then there's another step where it has to be directed. And there are many steps between the words on the words being written finally on the page and seeing the production come to life. With music, what I find so incredible is that if I play a key on a piano, the output is immediate. It happens instantly. You instantly hear the music. You have the idea, you play the note, and it's like that. It happens straight away. So I've always been drawn to this immediacy of music. And I think there's something so powerful about sound. Being at a concert or being listening to music with other people, you are experiencing the same frequencies, which might have a physical impact on your body. You know, the bass, the drums, they're physically impacting people around in similar ways. And so this kind of connection through music that we can experience collectively, I think is such a magical and powerful thing. And I think that's where this spiritual element comes from. You can literally feel the sound. It's a physical connection that you're having to this experience, which is very different from writing, where it's more cerebral, it's more about what's being said and processing those words and processing the narrative. There's this immediacy with music that I think is very, very powerful.
Indeed. And I've seen also probably, you know, the use of music, how we use music, how we relate to music. For example, coming from Africa, I know if you go to different countries, and recent example, that would be South Africa. I had the honor once to interview Yvonne Chaka Chaka. Now, Yvonne Chaka Chaka, she became an icon of freedom struggle during apartheid system in South Africa, because most of our music reflected on the struggles that people held. Mm-hmm. Reflected on their desire to be free from apartheid regime. Yeah. Good example is a song like Mama Land. So talking about how important it is to stand on your land, feel free, feel happy and free on the land that belongs to you, a country that you call yours. And you see, I saw music in South Africa being used as a tool to fight the apartheid regime. When you come to many different societies, if you go to places like Jamaica, you go to different other societies, you find they use music to address their immediate issues. I don't know your experience and in terms of the composition, the writer, the production, these processes, whether you've come across situations like that, especially in the West. And you know what? As a human being, I listen to a song that will make me feel better. You come, if I have worries, I want to listen to a song that is telling me, chill, it's going to be all right. Yeah. So I don't know whether you've come across situations like this in terms of the, you know, your journey with music.
This is Colorful Radio.
Colorful Radio. I think this is a very interesting question because, and it goes back to what you were talking about, this kind of spiritual quality to music. I think for me, when I write a song, I don't have a process so much. Sometimes I will come to a blank page and I won't have an idea. And playing different keys will inspire me to do something and it'll send me off in a particular direction. Sometimes I might write the lyrics first and tell a story and then the music kind of evolves from that. But I think this idea of kind of the expression of kind of the human condition, the human experience, reflections of the human experience through music is an interesting one for me because when I write a song, oftentimes I don't think, oh, I'm going to write about this injustice or this problem or this social issue. These things are absorbed from just living. You know, you hear things, you see things, and you just absorb them. And I think those things through the creative process, through making that music, they reveal themselves. It's not a conscious thing for me. And then it becomes something. It becomes that thing that's saying, oh, this or oh, that. But it doesn't necessarily come directly from that place. It's just the things that I absorb, the things that I've experienced, the things that I've seen that sort of morph into these little narratives that become part of the music. So for me, it's a very organic kind of process. It's not something that I dictate at the beginning. It just becomes the thing. And I think oftentimes I do comment on what's going on in the world around me and what I see and what I experience with my own two eyes and through living. And so it always surprises me sometimes the things that sort of are the outputs of that creative process, because it's not normally come from the starting point. It kind of takes its own course, takes its own life. And I almost feel like the music or something about the music is telling me what I should be doing, which is it's a very wonderful thing to experience, just being guided by the creative process, not by some idea that I have or some belief that I have. I find that very, very interesting. And I think, as I said, it links to this kind of spiritual quality that exists within music.
Amazing. We've seen recent example in Kenya, the Gen Z protests happening. And in that context, I think I saw music created out of what was going on. They were protesting, these young youths definitely protesting against bad governance, and they were protesting against, you know, the finance bill that came to be dropped by the government through their pressure. And in Kenya, I saw, you know, how important music was. They would create these songs through their own experiences as it was happening. And in a minute, you find them singing the same song. They didn't go there with a song. And it's a community experience, experienced by all these youths across Kenya, which was amazing. And actually, after being shot at with tear gas and running around with the police every other day, most of the time during the protest, they'll converge in the city center of Nairobi and they'll begin to sing these similar songs, which were not there before. And probably they can go on for hours. And it was so, I saw how important music was that particular moment. And when I look at your technologist as well, and we are talking about, you know, embracing AI into different spheres of life. I've seen, for example, in Nairobi, now they have a Robo Cafe, you know, it's a restaurant that is run by robots. And that's happening on the crowd in Africa, in Nairobi. You cannot believe it when you watch it. So in terms of also music, do you think all this new idea of you can create as a community music from what you're going through immediately. And AI is there as well. I mean, what's your take on this?
I think the question about AI is a very, very interesting one. And it's one I have my eye on. I've had many discussions with my friends, colleagues, family about what AI is going to do to humanity, how it's going to change humanity. And I think actually there is a value in human creativity that even if an AI system can create exactly the same output as a human being, there is something about that human quality that cannot be taken away, that we are drawn to. If I see a painting that has been created over many hours with a lot of detail, there's a lot of knowledge and practice that has gone into creating that painting. If you think about the great artists in the world, the amount of time it's taken for them to become highly skilled at what they do and to imagine the things that they imagine and put them on a canvas. I think it's a quality that is very, it cannot be replicated by AI. Even if an AI can create that same thing, it's not the same. Even if it looks the same, even if you have two identical pieces of art that look the same, or maybe even sound the same musically, it's not the same. There's something about just knowing that art has been created by a human that I think is very, very valuable. And so when I think about people's concern about AI in the future taking away from human creativity, taking away this kind of desire to want to create, and because AI can do it just as well or better, I think this is maybe a kind of dangerous sort of path to think about AI, because as I said, I think that there is a value in human creativity that cannot be replicated. There is a soul, even if it looks the same or sounds the same, that there is a soul to human creativity that cannot be replicated. If I go to a concert or a live performance or experience a play on a stage, there is something very visceral, very real, and kind of immediate about that experience. I don't know. Will AI be able to replicate that experience of a live experience or of humans interacting with each other? Possibly. Maybe one day it can be replicated. But I think there is something so beautiful about the natural world and about living beings. Just going into nature and experiencing, you know, the the beauty of nature, birds singing, water crashing into rocks. Those real natural things are very powerful. And again, I'm going to talk about that spiritual kind of, there's that quality that I think certainly in AI created material today, I think that this something is just not quite there, not quite right. And again, that might change, but I think there is a beauty to nature and to the lived experience that I think cannot be replicated by a system.
I find my life experience interesting because sometime when you want to log on to a computer desktop or your laptop, and it comes that point when you get it wrong, the system throws that thing they are telling you, prove that you are human. So I'm like listening to a robot sing. You could that come the, that moment prove to me that you're human too, because
yeah.
But the interaction between technology and people will never stop. Only yeah. That, as you rightly put it, I think there's something unique about when it comes to music. For me, I would rather listen to music, which is music coming from a human being, not a robot. It's not the same. It's not the same.
No, there's that thing about knowing, you know, knowing that the pure knowledge that something is created by a human being is enough to give it greater value, in my
exactly.
view.
Yeah, you go out there, you're a human being. Your experience maybe by watching a waterfall on a rocky place in you know, descriptions, like you can see the luscious green vegetation around it, you can see and you're describing what you can see, and you're telling us you can see people, you can see one beautiful women, girls, or you can see handsome men. All those things really can never be replaced by a robot's experience, because it won't see what we can see, and it's not the same.
No, it's not the same. It's and I think it's also interesting because AI is trained on vast amounts of data, and then it tends to pick a similar path when certain types of information are requested from it. Whereas a human, there are billions of humans living in the world, each with their own unique experience. So there's a kind of there's a kind of dynamic quality to human creativity that I don't think can be replicated by AI, because AI is trying to give you the best answer, and it may not always be the best answer. As you've articulated, sometimes the most profound thing can come from the person that's had the most unusual life experience and is able to see the world in a particular way. That nuance cannot be replicated by AI, in my view.
No, it can't be. Lastly, then, do you want to share with us about your production on 31st in Brixton?
Yes. So I'm very, very excited to be performing at Brixton House on Saturday, the 31st of August. So if you're interested in coming along to watch the concert Paradise, which features a lot of music that is kind of inspired by gospel, funk, soul, R&B, spoken word, all sort of wrapped up in one kind of narrative piece. If that sort of floats your boat, then absolutely come along, come and see the show, have a drink, and enjoy what I hope will be a very exciting and interesting evening at Brixton House. This has been a real labour of love. I've been working on this project for just about over a year, and it's nice to be working with collaborators like my guitarist Kiazi Lugangira, and my drummer and my bassist. It's very exciting to be performing live with these new collaborators. So please do get a ticket. You can order them from paradise.bekwagoro.com. You can follow me on Instagram as well, at Bekwagoro. And please do come down and say hello. It'd be lovely to interact with people who are from different backgrounds, different places, and just kind of experience this very exciting event together.
Wow, thank you so much, and I'm looking forward for it. And thank you very much for your time, Beck. And, listeners, you don't go away. Stay tuned for more programs coming to you from Colorful Radio.
Colorful Radio.
You understand what I'm saying?
I can't let you hold me back. Oh, no.
Take a minute and think about what you're doing, and why you're doing it, why you're pursuing it. Is you really happy? I've been all around the world, I'm back again. I'm rapping in a microphone to let them know that if you're coming at me, I'ma never give up. Give a damn if I gotta live up to every single one of your expectations.
I remember the moment of my life, the moment of eyesight, all up in the spotlight.
People think we gotta be the perception. What you need is an intervention. Everything that you're doing better be with intention. I hope every single one of you paying attention.
I used to move a certain way because I was afraid that I would not be loved the way that I deserve to be, until the day the fear deserted me, deserved to be free. And do whatever the f*** I wanna do, when I wanna do it, when it comes to the world and creativity.
All my life, I can't let you hold me back.
Catch a vibe on the dance floor. Catch a vibe, yeah.
Pray for me, my brother, when you